expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Everybody, welcome back to the Elyse Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. I am live in Los Angeles today, where it is only 8 o'clock in the morning. And my thanks to KFI for hosting today. I've been out here for a family bat mitzvah, which has been really terrific, except it's a really cold day, sort of really cold, rainy weekend in Los Angeles. My husband Sam tells me it is something like 80 degrees in Chicago today. It's probably about 45 here, and it was pouring yesterday. So I could see my breath as I was walking around coming to the studio this morning. And just really crazy. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, even when I'm in Los Angeles. The website thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Cool stuff going on. Cool stuff. You will really like it. Over at Money Watch, we have been burning up the airwaves with top 10 places, top 10 countries to live and work abroad. Hundreds of thousands of views this week for 2012, and the one for last year as well. That's been absolutely burning things up. We have a whole bunch of really cool blog posts that have gone up there. You're going to want to check them out. Over at the Equifax Finance blog, again, burning it up with all kinds of really useful tips coming down the line for tax season. Right? Including a whole new series we're just doing now on child identity theft and how it affects your taxes. It's almost tax season, and we have next week coming in, we've got our tax team. Bill, Mary, and Chet are back with us next week. So just great tax information. They'll also be back on Easter Sunday. We just want to line you up. So over at the Equifax Finance blog, great information there for you as well. At eCredible, if you are worried about your credit, you don't have credit, it's been destroyed, thin credit file, can't qualify in these lowest interest rates in history because you don't have enough credit, go to thinklink.com. Go to my website. In the right-hand corner, there is a sign, a little box for eCredible. Go there. And you will be able to find out how to build a credit history if you don't have one. And Dave Ramsey's favorite lender, Churchill Mortgage, right? You know, Dave Ramsey doesn't even believe in getting a loan, but he likes Churchill Mortgage because they will use non-traditional pieces of information to qualify you, like whether you pay your rent on time. Like whether you pay your utility bills on time. Like whether you pay your auto insurance on time. That's what eCredible does, and they will accept the eCredible credit score. Dave Ramsey loves it. I love it. It's great. Go to thinklink.com and click on the link there, and it'll take you to more information. So we have a great show today because there is some good news for a change in the housing market. I've been talking this whole year about how I feel like we are ready to rebound, that there is some really interesting stuff starting to happen on the fringes. The problem is, it's not like what Wes Moss talks about with the stock market. This week, we saw NASDAQ hit 3,000, which it hasn't hit since the year 2000. We have really just come so far with the stock market. It's kind of incredible. But when it comes to the housing market, not so much. I had people at this family reunion that we were at coming up to me saying, is this the time to buy a house? Is it now? What do I do? Is now the time? And I said, well, what do you plan to do with the property? Just because we have hit a new level of affordability. New level. Brand new level. I don't think we've been at this level in maybe 30 years. The National Association of Realtors came out with their affordability index, and it shows that we are twice as affordable as we were at the peak of the housing market. Right? So the index is now 206. At the height of the housing crisis, when everything was just about to tumble, when we were about to fall off the housing cliff, the affordability index was only like 106. What does that actually mean? It means that back then, you needed basically three times your income or four times your income to buy a house, and now you need less than two times your income to buy a house. That's affordable. And one of the reasons it's affordable is that mortgage interest rates are at 50-year lows. And the other reason it's affordable is that housing prices have come down more than 40% nationwide. So where's the good news? The good news is that in pockets around the country, even though nationally we're seeing the numbers drop, what's happening in pockets of each metropolitan area is things are starting to turn around. So in Chicago, the North Shore is starting to pull out. In Los Angeles, where I am today, areas like Brentwood, which is fancy and famous for O.J. Simpson and Nicole Simpson, are starting to pull out. San Francisco, there are pockets of neighborhoods starting to pull out where maybe things didn't go down 4 or 6% again last year. They only went down 0.5%, or maybe they even went positive. I'm seeing reports out of Boston. Some neighborhoods, like the Back Bay, starting to look very firm. Now, this does not mean that we are going to see housing prices zoom in affordability. We're just not anytime soon. What it does mean is now we're really starting to see a bottom. So the last 5 years when all of the real estate optimists out there said, we're seeing a bottom, there's a bottom, we're done. And I kept saying, no. I'm now saying to you that we may be seeing a bottom. And when we're seeing a bottom, that means that we're no longer going to have foreclosures and short sales be 35% of all home sales out there, which is not normal. It shouldn't be any more than, like, say, 6 or 8%. But it's been 33%. What about number of days on the market? We've had inventory where it would take 10 months at the height of it, 10, 11, 12 months to sell all the houses. If you didn't add a single other house for sale, it would take all that time to just sell those houses. Now that's dropped down to 6 months, really close to being normal. So where's the problem? The problem is that the minute everybody who wants to sell their house figures out we are turning the corner, they're all going to rush to put their houses on the market. Indeed, in my very own neighborhood, seven houses went up on the market this week and last week. I said to Sam, it's almost like the daffodils are sprouting out of the ground and for sale signs are sprouting out of the ground. Same thing is happening in Atlanta because there is such a pent-up demand for sellers who want to unload their property. And if you put everything on the market now, and we've got the $26 billion foreclosure settlement that we've been talking about the last few weeks, and all those properties go on the market, and we don't have enough demand to soak it all up, what do you think is going to happen? You betcha. Housing values are going to drop again. So there is a really fine dance that's going on here. And I'm not saying you shouldn't list your house for sale. I'm just saying some neighborhoods you're going to list your house for sale and it's going to go okay, and some neighborhoods it isn't. Now, Detroit had a remarkable turnaround where housing prices actually increased in a regional level 0.5%. But, hello, they're about to bulldoze half the city. I mean, they've shut down schools. There's, like, no police and fire in vast quantities in the neighborhood. I have a really good friend who lives outside of Detroit, and he's like, is anybody still living in Detroit? I don't know. Home prices are, you know, pretty low. We did a story for Money Watch about homes selling for, $600. Really nice brick, three-bedroom, two-bath houses, $600. You'd just have them for free. I'm sure somebody would be thrilled if you would just take it off their hands for the taxes. But it's beginning. It's starting to move, and you're going to need guidance in order to make the most of it. And that's what we're doing here every Sunday, 11 to 1. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. Lottie joins us on the line from Michigan. Hey, Lottie.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Enjoy reading your articles in the Detroit Free Press.
Oh, well, thank you so much for saying that. I've been in that paper for a very long time, and I'm glad to count you as one of those readers.
Oh, thanks. The reason I called my daughter 2 years ago was quit claim deed a home from her father.
Mm-hmm.
And we had it filed, but the taxes statement, it doesn't come to her. It still comes to him. Now, is that because he was behind in his property taxes?
Well, it's possible that when he quitclaimed the deed, he didn't actually file it correctly with the local recorder of deeds office. So if he didn't file it correctly, that's how you put the world on notice that things have shifted. She should call over to the local tax authority and ask them to put her name on it, on the tax bill. I'm sure they'll be delighted to do that.
Okay.
Has she done that yet?
Well, no, but the first time she took it down to have it filed, it wasn't filed correctly, and they showed her how to do it, so she had to come back and get it notarized again, her father and her, and then they took it back and it was correct.
Okay, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was recorded correctly.
Okay.
So there's another step that happens, right? There's the quick claim deed, and then you have to record the quick claim deed. And sometimes all the computers don't talk to each other.
Okay.
So the tax collector's computer may just not talk to the recorder of deeds, you know, computer over in Detroit or Michigan or wherever you guys live.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might have to follow up and figure that out.
So you said to go to the recording department?
Well, start with the tax collector. Go to the real estate property tax collector and make sure, try and see what address is on and if the property has actually been transferred properly into her name, her address, and all the rest.
Okay, so the tax collector first.
Tax collector first. If not, then you're going to go into the recorder of deeds and see if that's been recorded correctly.
Okay.
Now, is she happy about getting this house?
Oh, yes.
She's happy about it? She's happy to take care of it?
Well, actually, he still lives in it.
He lives in it? He just gave it to her?
Yeah, sort of.
Do you know why?
Well, he's 86, and he has a lot of family, and he just wanted to make sure she would, in case of his demise, he wanted to make sure that she'd be the one to have it.
Okay, well, I hope that there wasn't. Is it a very valuable property?
No,
okay.
No. Like a $40,000 home.
Okay, so the reason I ask is that when you give property and you're still alive, it's a big amount to give somebody, and sometimes you can have tax consequences, like estate tax consequences. But in this case, it sounds like that's not going to be the case. The better thing would be to always and have her inherit the property, write a will, and make sure that it transfers correctly so that they know that there isn't going to be some sort of tax when she turns around and sells it. So when you give somebody property, let's say it's this house for $40,000, and your daughter gets the property, now she goes and sells it, right? Let's say he dies and she moves into it, and 20 years later it's worth, I don't know, $300,000, right? So there's a profit there. And if she had inherited it, there would be a stepped-up basis. So there may be less tax to pay, and maybe there'll be no tax to pay. But just in general, it's sort of a good idea to inherit property rather than give property to your kids. Lottie, thanks so much for your call. And thanks for reading my column every week, which, by the way, everybody else can find online at thinkglink.com. 22 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more here on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Everybody, I'm Elise Glink. This is the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB, though I'm broadcasting from KFI in Los Angeles today. Thank you, KFI. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about President Obama's new plan, the new plan to stimulate refinancings of FHA mortgages. Even if you are deeply, deeply underwater, you should be able to cut your monthly costs. This is a new plan. They are forcing the lenders to do more for people who have FHA loans. So this is separate from all the other stuff that you've been hearing about. This is a new plan for FHA loans that is supposed to be able to help you switch down to a 4% loan. I keep talking about streamlined refinances, but there are some big ifs and some big potholes that you have to avoid. So I will talk about all of that when we come back. And, of course, we're going to be taking your calls, 404-872-0750. And don't forget to go to thinkglink.com, T-H-I-N-K-G-L-I-N-K, and sign up for the free weekly newsletter. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Live on Sundays here, 11 to 1 on News Talk WSB. I am live from Los Angeles today, where it is absolutely freezing. Don't know what the weather is in Atlanta, but it's cold here. Very chilly. It's the coldest weekend of the winter, and hello, it's spring. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, the website thinkglink.com. thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter and go visit the Equifax Finance blog for all kinds of great information on family money. Tax information, guys. It's tax season. Excuse me. Time to get your taxes in order, and we've got so much help for you. Next week, Bill, Mary, and Chet, enrolled agents from the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, are going to be joining us for a little bit of tax conversation. And then the following week, Easter weekend, we are going, which is the big weekend before taxes are due, we're going to go all in with a live two-hour tax show so you can call in and ask all of your own questions. Okay, let's talk about FHA streamline refinancings. Now, I've been talking about the whole FHA streamline refinance program for a long time, and this program has had some major evolutions. And we have seen, as FHA has gotten broker and broker, it's a real word, just not maybe the way I'm using it, but as the FHA fund has dropped precipitously, as they have had to pay out many, many more claims, we've seen FHA raise its insurance premiums. They've put on some new requirements. There's all kinds of stuff going on. In the meantime, there are all kinds of people who have FHA loans who would really like to take advantage of the historic low interest rates, but they can't. Why? They can't because they're underwater. Well, that's where the FHA Streamline Refinance Program was supposed to kick in, right? And yet, lenders just don't seem to be wanting to do this. And so you call and you're like, I want the FHA streamline refinance. And it's like, no, you have to do a full refinance. Well, that's really not what this is supposed to be. So the Obama administration this week announced a new plan to stimulate refinancings of FHA mortgages. And it is likely to help a large number of homeowners, even those who are deeply underwater, cut their monthly costs. So here's a quick overview of the program and what it will take for you to qualify. Now, first, your home loan must be FHA insured and must have been put on the FHA's books no later than May 31st, 2009. We'll talk about that date in a moment. May 31st, 2009. If you have a mortgage from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, VA, USDA, doesn't count. So this is only for FHA insured loans. Do you know if you have an FHA loan? All you have to do is go to your loan documents in your closing book and see what it says at the very top. If you have an FHA insured loan, at the very top of the very first page, it should say FHA loan. So if you don't know off the top of your head, can't remember even what your interest rate is, go back to your closing documents, pull them out, and take a look. Okay. You also need to have made an on-time payments for the last 12 months. So let's say you were late back in 2009. Now we're 2012, but for the last 2.5 years you've been on time. That's a good thing. You would qualify. But If you weren't, you're out. Okay, here's the biggie, and this one is a little bit controversial. If dropping the interest rate and refinancing does not give you a net savings of at least 5% in your principal, interest, and mortgage insurance payments, you don't get to play either. Why 5%? Well, they want to make sure it's valuable for you on a monthly basis. But here's the problem I have in a long-term way. If they start the clock ticking all over again with another 30-year loan and you're at 22 years, but you'll save 7% monthly, you still may end up paying more over the life of the loan because it's all stretched out. And you have to repay on those 8 years again. So they're looking for a monthly savings of at least 5%. When does it start? June 11th. Does not start until June 11th. And those are the hurdles that you have to overcome, right? You have to have had your loan on the books by May 31st, 2009. You have to have had on-time payments for 12 months. And you must be able to save at least 5% of the monthly principal, interest, and mortgage insurance payments. That will exclude hundreds of thousands of people, according to the FHA. So 500,000 active loans are eliminated simply because they got on the books after May 31st. Another 145,000 have mortgage interest rates of higher than 5%, but that's the cutoff date, so they're not going to play. Now, here's the good news. If you qualify, you don't have to deal with a whole lot of paperwork and underwriting hassles. There's no new verification of your income or employment status. If you've been paying on time for a year, the presumption is you're okay. There is no new credit evaluation, credit report, or FICO score that's pulled. There is no appraisal. No appraisal. Even if you were in seriously negative territory. And to sweeten the deal, the FHA is slashing its regular insurance premiums for qualified, streamlined applicants. So there's all kinds of good news here if you qualify. And if you don't qualify, you're just going to get really annoyed. But the whole goal here is to keep people in their houses. Now, I can just see people, I can see you at home going, oh my God, another government-funded payout for people who are have their mortgages. Why would I want to do this? Why should we do this? And the answer is, in Atlanta and nationally, home values fell again. And they fell because a huge number of people went into foreclosure. There are something like 28% of Americans who have mortgages who are underwater. Their houses are worth less than the mortgage amount. There are 14 million people who could fall into foreclosure. You know what that's going to do to your housing value? It's going to sink it a lot further than 13%. So the goal is fewer foreclosures, fewer short sales. Keep people in their houses. Make it more affordable. Help them pay this down a little bit faster so that we have fewer foreclosures, so that the taxpayers aren't on the hook with FHA, Fannie and Freddie for hundreds of billions of dollars more in failed foreclosures. Keep people on time paying their loans. Reward them for doing that by helping them refinance, which is what they'd be able to do anyway, except they've gotten caught in a vicious cycle that has not been of their own doing. So for everybody who calls the show and says, where do I get mine? This is a piece of yours. This is a piece that you get to play with. 404-872-0750. As we get more of this, we will absolutely get back in touch and let you know exactly what's going on. But June 11th is when this program is supposed to start. If you call before June 11th, I guarantee nobody will have any idea what you're talking about. What I don't know is if you call June 12th, that they will have an idea. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, all of them. 44 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Steve joins us on the line from Grayson. Hey, Steve.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
Well, I want to take advantage of the housing market that you've been talking about and help one of my children buy a house. And I was reading that I could take money out of a SEP retirement plan with no penalty up to $10,000. What I can't find, is there any tax implications on taking that money out?
So you're going to help your child with the down payment?
Yes.
Is that what you're thinking? Okay.
Yes.
How do your other kids feel about that, by the way?
I've already helped the other one.
Okay. Fair is fair. Now, you know, yep. I'm a mom of two, so I totally feel for everybody. Yes, you can take money out up to $10,000 for the purchase of a first home. But you're not doing the buying.
Correct.
Your child is doing the buying.
Yes.
So are you over the age of 59 and a half?
No.
Then there anyway, regardless of whether you were or you weren't, there would be taxes owed on this money because this was tax-deductible, tax-deferred cash you put away. And it's because it's not you buying the house, a first home, my sense is, and I'm not an enrolled agent. You have to call in next week to find out that or call our tax experts. But my guess is that you would have to pay the 10% penalty on top of the taxes because you're not using this money to buy a house.
Well, I did read in the regs that I found on the Internet that you can do a one-time to a child without the penalty, but it was the actual tax on the money for, you know, bringing it out that I've not been able to find anything on.
No, you have to pay the tax anyway. Even if it were for yourself buying a house, it's just it allows you to bring it out. It's not a tax-free withdrawal.
Okay.
If that's what you're asking.
So it's a penalty-free but not tax-free.
Penalty-free but not tax-free.
Okay, that's clear.
Is my understanding. Now, I guarantee if we have a lot of tax people who listen to the show every week, and if I have gotten that wrong, they will tweet me about it. And I will turn around and report it right back to you. But
okay.
but that isn't the way. Is there any other place that you could get that money? Because, you know, do you have a Roth IRA? That would be maybe a better place.
No, I've actually been waiting on this because the retirement plan had gone way in the hole. It's just now come back since the crash.
Right.
Where I'm just a little bit positive from where I was before the crash.
So here's one other idea. You may be able, if your employer allows this, you may be able to borrow $10,000 or whatever it is she needs for that down payment and then pay yourself back through deductions from your pay and then kind of do it in the reverse. So you're borrowing from yourself, which normally I don't like, but you're going to take the money out anyway to help your kid. So you're borrowing from yourself, but you're paying yourself back. That may be another way to slice the coin.
Okay, I'll look into that too.
Yeah, and that way, you know, because you want to help your, is it a daughter or a son?
Son.
You want to help your son do this. And tell me a little bit about your son. Is he sort of ready for the responsibilities of home ownership? Is he, you know, all ready to go?
Yes, he's working for our company now, and things are stabling out, and he is he's ready to go, and the market is really ready.
Yeah, it is really ready. Does he know where he's going to be for the next 5 to 7 years, or is the plan for him to live there a couple of years and then rent it out, you know, sort of fix it up while he's there, then rent it out and start a little side career as a real estate investor?
He will probably just use it as his home place.
Okay. One other suggestion for him and for you as well, because this would impact how much of a down payment he needs. So I've just been talking about FHA, and if you go online to a website that's called HUDHomestore.com, HUDHomestore.com, that is the website for all of the HUD homes, which are FHA foreclosures, that have been turned around and put on the market. And there are all kinds of low down payment. I mean, we're talking like less than $1,000, like in some cases less than a buck. For people who are going to be owner-occupiers, right, so your son is going to buy a place and live there, where he might actually be able to buy a house with almost nothing down or $1,000 down through this HUDHomestore.com. So you need to find an agent who's certified and can help him do it, but you can start to look online at all of these properties that are for sale and get a sense if that's going to be a possibility. If he already knows what neighborhood he wants to be in, there are some great HUD homes in wonderful school districts. So maybe something to think about.
That is definitely something to think about. Thank you.
Yeah, If I can avoid you taking 10 grand out of your retirement, even if you pay yourself back, that's what I want to do.
Thank you for that advice, too.
You're welcome, Steve. Thanks for calling the show. Have a great Sunday. 50 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more here on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. You can tell the caffeine hasn't quite kicked in. It's just before 9 o'clock in Los Angeles, which is where I am this weekend. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go back to the phones. Ann joins us on the line from Texas. Hey, Ann.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for calling the show.
You're welcome.
What's on your mind today?
Okay, I was asking if a widowed stepmother can mortgage a paid-for home that our father paid for with our names. She was left in the original deed one half interest, and my sister and I were left the other half interest. And I didn't know what the laws are on, unbeknownst to us, can she, in fact, mortgage a home that also has our names on the original deed?
No. Not without asking for a waiver or getting you to sign on. Is that what she did?
Okay, the mortgage company would do that. And then can she rent that said home without our permission?
No.
Okay.
Do you still own this house or were there... This is like red flag city to me, Ann. I mean, what I'm seeing is like mortgage fraud all over this.
It's a big red... And I'm just asking, nothing's been tried yet to our knowledge.
She hasn't refinanced or she has?
She may. I don't know. And if she wanted to, I don't know what recourse we'd have. And also, I wanted to know if she could. She can't rent it out, but she could without our permission. She lives in another city.
All right, let's back
and
up a little bit.
She's incommunicado.
She's incommunicado. She's gone off the rails. All right, there's an easy way for you to check.
Okay.
And you may want to get a real estate attorney to do this for you, but you can pull a copy of the title.
Okay.
And it will show you what liens are on the property.
Okay.
And if she refinanced, you will see a lien for the new loan against the property.
Okay.
That's an easy way to do it, and you don't need her permission to pull that.
Okay.
That's public record. If there is a mortgage lien against this previously paid off property,
okay,
then I'm just going to hazard a guess, but she probably forged your name and your sister's name to do that.
Okay.
Because in anything that I can imagine, you need everybody who owns the property to sign off on a mortgage.
And also, if she would want to use it as a finance for, in case she has to go to a care facility, that again, they'd have to have our permission, wouldn't they? Or how do they look at those deeds?
Yeah, they look at who owns it. So there's a couple of possibilities. One is she did a quick claim deed from you to her without your knowledge, which would be a forgery.
She's capable of it.
And then, oh my God. So then she could easily have forged your names on a mortgage and scammed it out of it and stripped the property of its value. And what you would need to do then is prove that she committed mortgage fraud. And then she would literally... they would have to unwind those transactions. The money would go back into the property, and she would hopefully go to jail. But you're going to need an attorney to start to sort that out for you, Ann. Oh, man, that's just awful. But I am seeing red mortgage fraud flags all over the place, and I would encourage you to get on this right away, if for nothing else than to honor your dad. 59 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. We got a whole nother hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for listening to the show this morning. 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. The website, thinkglink.com. thinkglink.com. While you're there, don't forget to check out the newsletter. We have a great weekly newsletter. Shows up in your box usually Thursday mornings, unless sometimes it's a little bit early. We're also doing all kinds of really interesting things on the news button. If you go to thinklink.com and click on news, what you're going to see is all kinds of really important information about the housing market. Things that we're coming across that we just feel like has to get posted somewhere. We're starting to post them all at ThinkLink under the news button. So if you click on there, it'll take you to the latest real estate news. And, for example, Friday, March 16th, HUD approved housing counseling agencies to get $42 million in grant money to help families find housing and avoid foreclosure. There are other organizations that are getting, like, another nearly $100 million together. So that's all the kinds of stuff that we put up there. This week we've covered Freddie Mac's mortgage interest rate rising. Purchase activity remaining low. We've talked about whether the housing news is actually getting better and what that means. And the total cost of the Freddie Mac bailout at the moment is $146, or just for the month, another $146 million. So there's all kinds of interesting stuff going on at ThinkLink. Just click on the news button. You'll see the news articles, and I think you'll get a really good sense of where we are and what's happening. All right, 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Bud joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Bud.
Oh, hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, how are you?
Fine, thank you. You went over the new mortgage program, and the one question I have, which you didn't cover, is my daughter has an interest-only loan. Otherwise, so does it only apply to fixed mortgages? Or will she be covered?
Okay, so the first question that you have to answer is, does she have an FHA loan? Does she?
Yes, she does.
So she has an interest-only FHA loan, really?
Uh-oh, maybe I'm wrong then. I thought I remember saying she had an interest-only loan, but, you know, I could be wrong.
So let's talk about that for a minute, because FHA typically only offers loans in two varieties, 15-year fixed or 30-year fixed.
Okay, then she wouldn't qualify.
An interest-only loan, it's probably not even Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Those loans were done in a very strange way. How long has she had that loan?
She's had it for probably 10 years or maybe 10 or 12 years.
So is it still interest-only, or was it interest-only for, say, the first 10 years and now it's converting?
Yes, I think it did convert, and, you know, of course, she's enjoying a low interest rate right now.
Well, she is, except that she has 20 years left to pay off a loan that she paid interest on only for the first 10 years, but now she's got to get the principal paid off in 20 years.
That's right.
So it's a much steeper climb for her.
Yeah, you bet.
So I think, is she starting to have trouble making those payments?
No, she's not, but
okay.
Getting a little fearful of the interest-only loan and that interest rates may go up and then her mortgage payment would be higher than she can afford, you know.
So the way that those loans typically work, Bud, is that 10 years you were interest-only and that was fixed, and then it converts to a one-year adjustable. Now, right now, and it depends what it's tied to. If it's tied to U.S. Treasuries, the one-year adjustable is really low right now. It's in, like, the low 3% range. But if it's tied to LIBOR, the lender interoffer bank rate, that rate has started to rise a little bit.
Oh.
It's still low, but it's going up. So the question, so here are some questions. Number one, when she had the interest only, did she ever pay anything towards the principal?
No.
Okay. Number two, is she underwater?
Yes.
How far underwater?
Oh, about at least $20,000.
$20,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a way for her to start paying down that loan so that she can get right side up in that mortgage?
No.
No, she can't afford that.
No.
Okay. So she's in a rock and a hard place because I don't think that that loan is an FHA loan. That would be my gut check. I mean, I wish it were, really, but I don't think it is. So if it's not an FHA loan and she's underwater, it's probably also not Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So then is it an old Bank of America? Is it a new Bank of America loan that was an old Countrywide loan? They did a lot of those interest-only loans.
Okay.
If it's an old Countrywide loan, she may be eligible under the $26 billion mortgage settlement.
Uh-huh.
And on top of that, Bank of America is doing a special thing for some of their those old Countrywide loans. Maybe she's eligible under that for something.
Yeah, I think Wells Fargo is holding the mortgage right now.
Okay, so she should call Wells Fargo.
Okay.
And see if there's anything that they can do for her.
Okay.
In terms of refinancing that loan, if there's any program at all, even one of their own private label programs, she can refinance. But I'm going to tell you that she only has 20 years left on this mortgage.
Right.
So maybe she can get a 15-year loan at like 3.5%.
Exactly.
But that is going to raise her monthly payments because now she's compressed the amount of time for repayment even further. But at least she's got a fixed interest rate.
Yeah, and she would probably need some money down to refinance, too. And
she may or she may not. It depends what kind of program Wells Fargo has, and the government has put a whole lot of incentives on the table to keep people like your daughter in their houses rather than refinancing, right?
Okay, yeah.
So I think that that's the first, she should go to her closing documents and pull them out and see if she has an FHA loan.
Okay.
And maybe she does, and maybe there was something that was done 10 years ago. We don't know.
All right, I'll do that. I'll have to double-check it, And then she should
call Wells Fargo.
Right.
And then just kind of walk her through. And if she doesn't qualify for anything, then what I think she has to do is she has to find money in her budget every month to prepay this mortgage and start to build up some equity.
Yeah.
So she has, and you know what? I bet she can find room in her budget. You know why I know that? Because I've traveled the country talking to people.
Yeah.
And there are all sorts of sneaky ways to save money in your budget where you don't even feel the pinch.
Oh, absolutely.
So I know she can find room in that budget because I've met, you know, 5,000 other people who have done exactly the same thing.
Absolutely.
They all think they can't afford it, but they can. You know.
You bet. I agree with you. Yeah. Well, listen, thank you very much for taking my call. I enjoy listening to you every week on my way home from church.
Oh, but thank you so much for saying that. I really appreciate it. We love having you participate, and thanks for calling today. 15 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Seal joins us on the line. Hi, Seal.
Hey.
How are you?
Oh, doing good. But my husband and I would like to refinance, and we actually had refinanced back in October of 2009. And, of course, that was after the May 31st, cutoff date for the refinancing that had taken place before.
All right. Well, let's back up a little bit. Do you have an FHA loan?
It is through Fannie Mae.
Okay. So you wouldn't even qualify for what I was talking about earlier.
Right.
Okay. So you have a Fannie Mae loan, and you refinanced. What's your interest rate?
Interest rate is right now 5.5%.
Okay, so certainly it would be great to refinance. And what is the terms of value, equity, no equity, underwater, overwater, what do you have?
We've got a little bit of equity built up now.
That's nice.
Yeah, and we got good credit, we got stable income.
Okay, and have you called, who's your lender?
Bank of America.
Okay, and have you called Bank of America and tried to refinance?
Yes.
What happened?
Everything looks good, but because of that cutoff date, they're not touching us.
Because of the cutoff date of May 31st, 2009 for the FHA program?
Absolutely.
They're not touching you. What does that have to do with anything?
That's what I'm trying to find out,
all
and
right.
I figured maybe I would ask you.
You know what? Got me. That shouldn't, you know, it's been almost 3 years since you refinanced, and I'm not sure what the deal is. But you don't have to stay with Bank of America. If you have equity and you have good credit, you can go elsewhere.
Well, I actually went to SunTrust, and they did the same thing. We went all the way through the channels, and then they stopped and said, wait a minute, because of the cutoff date of your last refinance, we're not touching you again. So I'm just trying to find out. Somebody, please tell me what this big cutoff date means. I don't understand it all.
All right. So in terms of FHA, right, and I will just tell you sort of, all right, well, let me see if this explains a little bit of it. So there is a three-year seasoning period, which there has been for a long time for mortgage, during which the bulk of insurance claims for FHA, delinquencies and foreclosures, normally occur. But that doesn't have anything to do with refinancing a mortgage, unless you don't happen to have, you've got some equity, but maybe you don't have enough equity, and they still have to go through a government program to refinance you. So
Okay. There
is the Home Affordable Refinance Program, and maybe that's what you're being qualified for. I'm guessing that it's that, because there are some specific things that go into that. And have you been to makinghomeaffordable.gov?
Yes, I have.
So have you found anything on there about lowering your rate, and that you had, there's that magic date that you keep running up against? Are you finding that at all?
I hadn't found one thing. The only thing that's just tripping me up is this date.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. But here's what I'd like you to do. Tomorrow morning, I think you should call the Homeowners Hope Hotline, which is the HUD Certified Housing Counselors.
Uh-huh.
They are on the makinghomeaffordable.gov site. And the number is 888, toll-free number, 888-995-HOPE.
Okay.
I think what you might want to do is call them and see what's going on. Now, there is an eligibility issue for HERP, that your loan must have been sold to Fannie or Freddie before May 31st of 2009.
Right.
That's for HARP. So maybe that's what you're running into. But what about a non-HARP refinance? Maybe you don't. So then the question is, do you actually have enough equity for a non-HARP refinance?
Right.
And when you say you have a little bit of equity, what do you actually have?
Oh, probably about $10,000.
It's more important to know what the percentage is.
You mean the rate?
No. The percentage of, sorry, do you have 10% equity or 5% equity?
Oh,
or?
My goodness. That would be low then.
Okay.
And if you're only looking at $10,000 and we owe $170,000.
Okay. So do you have any other cash that you could use to buy in for a refinance? Because to do a refinance, you'd need at least 5%.
Right.
And it sounds like you don't have quite even 5%.
Yeah.
And you don't know what the property is worth. So you know you owe $170,000. Do you know what the property is worth?
I know what the property is worth. It's worth $180,000 right now, and we owe $170,000.
How do you know it's worth $180,000?
Well, when we started to refinance about 6 months ago, they did the refinance, and it came under. It came out with the appraisal at $180,000.
Okay, so they actually went as far as to do an appraisal.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just won't, it looks like you may not qualify for HARP, and you're not going to qualify for the FHA program because it's a Fannie Mae loan. So now the question is, what do you qualify for? So if you can bring some cash to the table, you can probably start with a different lender or even an FHA loan and just start from scratch and do it. But now you have to wonder whether that's going to be worth it.
Right, right.
Because you're at 5.25, you could go down to 3.25. Ideally, you'd go down to like a 3.25 15-year.
Yeah.
Because then you're really saving some money.
Right, which is what I'd love to do.
But you have to figure out if you can bring some cash to the table. If you can bring some cash to the table, I think you're going to be able to refinance. But otherwise, you're not going to get into any of these other programs, which is heartbreaking. But they have to draw a line in the sand somewhere. I don't understand why that May 31st date is popping up for you. I don't know why that's such a huge issue, except that's just when the programs start. And you know, they put dates around these programs. The reason they do is because they have to eliminate some people, because there's not enough money to do everybody. It's trillions and trillions of dollars of loans. So maybe that's what you're getting caught into. But in the meantime, you just want to see if it would even make sense to start from scratch, gather some cash, and do a real refinance, and that's what you ought to look at. 22 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Kling Show. When we come back, we're going to do our prize pack. Stay tuned for that on News Talk WSB.
Got on board a westbound 747.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Time for the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. The value, $508. Wait till you hear what's in this. There is a four-pack of tickets to the Atlanta Home Show, March 23rd to 25th. A maintenance agreement for your HVAC, courtesy of Shoemate. Synthetic oil change from Braxton Automotives. And see the Eagles May 2nd at the Verizon Amphitheater. All that can be yours if you are the fifth caller. 404-741-0750 is our prize number. Be nice to Fred because he's going to take your call. Good luck to you, fifth caller. I'm Elyse Klink. We're going to take a short break. We will be right back with more answers to your questions next here on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elyse Kling Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750. Have you been tweeting me? You can join me on Twitter. I am at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Almost at that 4,000 follower point. I'm just trying to get over that next hump. So join me online at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Over at thinklink.com, T-H-I-N-K-G-L-I-N-K.com, sign up for the free weekly newsletter. We have all kinds of news going on that we're recording, little updates on where mortgage interest rates are, the new releases from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, what's going on between FHFA. And then the one thing I wanted to share with you is that I was this week at the Society of American Business Editors and Writers Conference, and I had the chance to meet the guy, Richard Cordray, who is running the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is the upstart new government agency that is supposed to work on your behalf. So Richard Cordray announced during his talk, his prepared remarks, that you, if you are having trouble with your loan, that you don't just have to go to helpwithmybank.gov, that you could actually submit a complaint online, right? If you go there, cfpb.gov or consumerfinance.gov, you can submit a complaint about your mortgage, your credit card, your bank account or bank services, your vehicle loan or consumer loan, and your student loan. So I'm, you know, looking around and I'm thinking to myself, well, that's great. What does that actually do for you, right? So basically what you have to do is put in the complaint form, what happened, the desired resolution, your information, your product information, and your review. This is just for the mortgage one. For credit cards, probably a similar thing. I'm looking at it online. And, you know, again, what happened, desired resolution, your information, product information, review. And you go through a short form. And then it asks you if you've contacted the company directly. Have you contacted the CFPB previously? Have you contacted another government agency? Have you hired an attorney? Have you filed legal action? You submit the form and you get a claim number. So I get a chance to have a conversation with Richard Cordray afterwards, and I say to him, what are you actually doing with this stuff? Like, you submit a complaint, and where does the complaint go? And he said, well, we upload all this stuff to the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC. And I said, okay, that's great. The FTC aggregates complaints, and then they look for trends. They don't actually do any individual investigation. They don't get back to the consumer. They don't do anything. It's all internal for them. And then maybe they send reporters some big, grand, you know, trend things. What else are you doing? I said, are you like the OCC, where they actually have people from Bank of America and Chase and Citi and Wells Fargo and all the lenders that they regulate, and they have like a phone call or a meeting once or twice a week, and it's like, okay, here's your caseload, here's some new stuff, what's going on, what have you done lately? I said, are you doing that? And Richard Cordray is like, well, we're very clear online what we're doing. But they're not. It doesn't actually tell you what they're going to do with the complaint. So I tweeted out that this was something that you could now do. And, you know, we're just not getting sort of an interesting answer, right? So I'm not sure what submitting a complaint with the CFPB will do, but I can tell you that at least there's another place to start to log complaints. So CFPB.gov, I have high hopes that they can do something. I have medium expectations. I'm hopeful that we can finally get a government agency to really protect consumers. And they do have a mandate from some of it. When I asked the question, how are they going to get in the middle of FHFA, which is fighting with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which is fighting with the federal government, and everybody's sort of at odds with opposite motivations, shall we say. He's like, look, we are going to be right in the middle of it. We're going to control it. We're going to push the whole mortgage thing. We're going to make it easier and better for consumers. The agency's 2 months old. Elizabeth Warren couldn't even get confirmed as the head of it. She was the one who was brought in to organize it. She's now running for the Senate in Massachusetts. Richard Cordray from Ohio has been brought on board to make it work, and I hope he can. I hope he can. I did a 9-minute interview with him, or I recorded it, and when I get back to the office tomorrow, we're going to get some of that interview up online so you can hear what he has to say or read what he has to say over at thinklink.com. So check out the news feed for that. But I don't know. I can't tell you what's going to happen with the CFPB.gov site. I can't tell you where your complaint is going to go. I wish I could, and I'm hoping to get more insight from the CFPB so I can share that with you. And right now, it's just a little opaque for me. 404-872-0750, 42 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the phones. Rich joins us on the line from Dunwoody. Hey, Rich, happy Sunday.
Same to you. And you do such an awesome job of spending whatever time is necessary to get to the bottom of your caller's issue. And that's really, really nice to hear.
Oh, thank you. I'm trying to enlighten you guys so that we can all, I think, make better, smarter decisions, right? I mean, it's real estate. It's like our single biggest thing that we own.
Yeah, what you and the Clarks of the world do, it's really an awesome asset for the public. It really is.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled that we can help out. What can I do for you today?
Okay. I have a relative who maybe 20 years ago purchased a home with longtime boyfriend in Florida. Right now, there's a clear title. Both are on the deed. They haven't been dating for a while, but again, clear title, both on the deed. He has dual citizenship, I believe, in Puerto Rico and Argentina. And he died a year or so ago in Argentina. And I do believe a death certificate were issued in both countries, or Puerto Rico, rather, and then also Argentina. Now, his family have their sights set on this property, which she's been in for 20 years. So she needs to get the deed in her name, title in her name only, and she needs a death certificate. Now, and to wrap it up, I believe his family, daughters, what have you, in Puerto Rico have an original death certificate there, and apparently she needs, from what I understand, to get one in Argentina. Which has been, I don't know if this is more of a legal or a real estate question, but
it sounds it sounds very legal, but hey, I'm game to take a shot at it. Why does she need, if she has one death certificate from Puerto Rico, which is...
No, she does. Some of his family in Puerto Rico have that one.
Okay, so where did he die?
He died in Argentina.
He died in Argentina. Okay, but there is a certificate that's been filed in Puerto Rico.
Correct.
So she should hire an attorney in Los Angeles who can pull a copy of the death certificate in Puerto Rico, who understands that system.
L.A. to Puerto Rico, that's an interesting...
No, not L.A. You said she's in Florida.
She is in Florida, correct.
So Florida, she should hire... I'm in L.A.
Yes.
The show's in Atlanta. I'm in L.A. You're...
Gotcha.
She's in Florida, and you are... I don't know where you are. So... She should hire an attorney in Florida who has ties to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And can pull that.
Okay.
I cannot imagine why she would need a death certificate in Argentina, but legally that would be something that, I can't even imagine. Maybe the attorney would have some good ideas on how to find an attorney in Argentina and how that process works. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah. Now, I believe she was told she can't get a copy. You had to have an original, and I think she's a bit intimidated by his survivors down in Puerto Rico, because they have more money and this, that, or the other, and she doesn't want to get into a legal battle with them. She just wants to, under the radar, you know, get this certificate done. And,
well, let me ask a question.
Yeah.
How does she hold title to the property in Florida? Did she and her boyfriend hold it as joint survivors?
I'm not sure if I can answer that, Kat, legally answer that question from my point of knowledge. I know they purchased it. They purchased it together. They both put something in it, and it was a cash transaction.
All right. So usually in that kind of a situation, they would have held it as title was held jointly with rights of survivorship.
Yeah.
So if either of them died, the other one got the property in total. It bypassed wills and probates and all that kind of stuff and just went into the other person. So you would need a copy of an original death certificate. Not a copy, but you would need an original death certificate, which you can get directly from the government in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
You can bypass the people. And then it shows that he has died, and so title should fall to her.
Now
if they bought it as tenants in common, then she cannot go around the daughters or the kids, the family. She will have to come to some sort of financial arrangement with them, unless there was a dual life estate set up where for as long as one of the other, you know, she or her boyfriend lived, they would live, you know, be able to live in that property.
Right.
So I'm guessing they're joint owners with rights of survivorship. And so the attorney, whatever that costs, will help her be able to pull the legal document that she needs, the death certificate, and then file it.
Now, would a closing attorney representing them in the original purchase and closing write that up as an addendum, if you will, to the contract, or is that stated in the?
No, it should be right at the top. I mean, you can even find it if you go pull a copy of the title. It should tell you how title was held. It's tenants in common, tenants by the entirety, which they would not have been eligible for because they weren't married, or rights of, you know, joint tenants with rights of survivorship. It should say it right on it.
Okay.
On the title or on the deed.
Okay, on the deed. Now, is any of this information, the public information, I guess it is, that a layperson like myself could access via the Internet?
Sure, you ought to be able to. You ought to be able to go to the recorder of deeds office where the deed would have been recorded.
Yeah.
And go online, and you ought to be able to look at it.
Yeah.
Or there may be some sort of a small fee.
Yeah, okay.
So, does she have any of her original paperwork from the closing?
Oh, I'm sure that she does.
So the easy thing to do would be to open up the package and take a look and see what it says. Or she could fax it to you or scan it to you, depending on how tech-savvy she is, and then you can look at that.
Okay. All right. Well, I know you need another caller or two to squeeze in, but I do know that she'd have an attorney write to Argentina or send some correspondence down, and he came up with a document that they needed. They're moving slow, and I found the same thing myself as a layperson. But I think we just need to look at the paperwork and go from there.
I think the paperwork is key, and again, I'm not sure why maybe because he died there, but if you've got a death certificate from Puerto Rico, it seems like that would be the easy one to get. But you would definitely want to talk to a real estate attorney with an international tie.
Yeah.
And if she can't find one, where in Florida does she live?
Melbourne, East Coast.
So Melbourne should have a local bar association, or you would go to the state bar association. You would ask for the head of the real estate committee, get that person on the phone, explain the situation, and ask for a referral.
Okay.
And if that person can't help you, they will know somebody because their job is to know the people who know this kind of stuff.
Right, right.
And can unwind it.
Gotcha. Last very quick question, if I might. Can there be more than one original death certificate?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, gotcha.
So it seems like what they don't want you to do is take an original death certificate which has coating on it, or it sometimes has raised paper, and then make a photocopy of it.
Right, right.
They don't want you to do that. But if you just go to the registrar or the people who issue them in Puerto Rico, I don't know what agency
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
If you went there, they would just issue another original.
Okay. All right. All right.
So it's complicated in that you have to go to places where you aren't located or she isn't located in other countries, and you have
yeah.
to do this. So it's going to take time. It's going to cost her a little bit of money,
mm-hmm.
but I really feel like she needs a smart attorney who can
yeah.
manage it for her, especially if the kids have money, have assets, know what they're doing, and
yeah.
are three steps ahead of you because they're in that country already. So
right.
she needs to sort of get on the stick about this, and I think an attorney will be very, very helpful.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck to her, and thanks for calling. 50 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back with more here on News Talk WSB.
This ain't no disco. It ain't no country club.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
6 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm laughing because here I am at Los Angeles, courtesy of KFI. Thank you so much, Bob, who's sitting over there, making sure that this sounds awesome on the air. And we're playing all LA music this hour. So thanks to Fred and Crystal for their incredibly witty production of the show. Let's go back to the phones right now. We have Maggie joining us on the line from Acworth. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm good. What about you this Sunday morning?
Oh, I'm loving the weather.
I bet. It's a little chilly here in L.A.
Oh.
But I'll be back. I'll be back in Chicago soon where it's like 80 today.
For today.
Yeah, because it's March. Wouldn't it always be 80 in Chicago? Anyway.
Yeah.
What's on your mind today?
Well, we have an FHA mortgage, and it's a 30-year fixed. We have 5% interest, and we bought it in December 2008. So we are interested in taking advantage of the new program that they have, but we would like to go to a 15-year, and if we did that, would it be better than a 4% interest?
All right. So,
and we do have streamline.
Right. So if you streamline it, what they're supposed to do, but I don't know if they're doing, is just take your interest rate down to, let's say, 4% and leave the rest of the mortgage the same.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a 30-year fixed and you've already been there for 4 years, you have 26 years left, it just would change for the next 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's my sense of how this is supposed to go. What
okay.
I'm hearing from people is it's not always going that way. That what they're doing is instead of just kind of, you know, lowering the interest rate, which would be the, you know, what I would imagine the intelligent thing to do, they're actually retooling you back to a 30-year mortgage to drive down the amount you're paying.
Mm-hmm.
Because there has to be this sort of monthly 5% less going on. Now, if you go to a 15-year, that could be even lower, but that may not be an option under this program. To go to a 15-year, that would be a whole new refinance, not a streamlined refinance, and you'd pay all this money in fees, and you'd be at a 15-year, and then it's a question of do you even have the equity to do that?
Exactly.
So,
and I'm assuming right now I don't think we're underwater, but, you know, 4 years ago when we bought it, we just were way tickled with the deal that we made for ourselves. But I think all of that is gone. You know,
yeah.
all the equity that we bought into is gone.
Yeah, I can promise you it's gone. it's gone because you're in Atlanta and prices dropped another 13% last year. I think what you might be stuck with doing is getting what you can get from a streamlined refinance, and then at least you're saving some money and you're prepaying from there. And that's the place that I would start. Maggie, thanks so much for your call. You can hear the music, folks. That means our time is up. So sorry about that. Hey, tune in next week. We're doing tax, and we've got Andy Heller coming back to talk about why now is the best time to buy investment real estate. Have an awesome week, everybody. Talk to you again soon.